The Gemara Sanhedrin. It's not easy to find. Seems to be a rare commodity here. So we're on Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. And we're studying the Sugya of Shuma, you remember? Which means that we have to evaluate an object, let's say metalin, sometimes karka, it's movable, sometimes it's real estate, in order for a person to pay up his debt to Hegdesh or to Erechim. And in Vayikra Perek of Zion, we saw that the Torah has three different themes, three different types or categories of pidyon. The first of the three is Erechim, when a person says Erechi Olai. And then the second is called Pidyon Behema, which is Metaltalin. And the third is Pidyon Karka. And throughout this parasha, the Torah repeats the word Kohen. It says it three times in the beginning of the parasha with regard to Erechim, another three times in the middle of the parasha with regard to Behema. And the third Pidyon, which is karka, if a person who's magdish is karka, there it says four times. You know, the word kohen appears four different times, over and over again. Now, normally, meaning with the exception of karka, if we're dealing with evaluating, let's say, currency, because even currency coins get spoiled over the passage of time. They get rusty and they lose their value on the market. Or let's say we're evaluating metalton like payros, and sometimes the payros spoil. It's very hard to determine how much somebody in the market would pay for those payros. Or if a person was magdish a kli, he said that this vessel, this table should be for Hegdesh. In all these cases, we need a tribunal, a group of three experts who will come and evaluate what it's worth. It could be that one of them will give a high price, another one will give a low price, and then they'll find a compromise with one in the middle. And that's to guarantee that Hegdesh gets what's coming to them. If a person would be allowed to do his own evaluation, he might devaluate the object in order to spend less money and pay Hegdesh less. So we want to get this objective group, this panel of three experts. Rashi says they're experts because they're in the field, meaning they buy and they sell. They're in the retail business. So they know exactly what they can get for a given volume of payrolls. Even if it's spoiled, they know that some people are desperate. If it's not totally spoiled and it's still edible, what they could bring in. So that's going to give us an objective shuma. Shuma meaning an appraisal of its value. And we have here a shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to the Chachamim, insists that in each case, whether we're evaluating metaltalin and currency is also movable, or we're evaluating karka, which requires a much more serious panel. In the case of metaltalin, all we need is three members of this tribunal. In the case of karka, real estate, we need how many members? 10. Rabbi Yehuda says, in all cases of Shuma, we need one representation of the Kohanim. There's got to be at least one Kohen on the panel. And that's what we're up to today. So if you open up to Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph, you will see the two dots, which are about, I would say, maybe 15 lines down from the top. And if it helps you, the first word of the line is ta'i. So if your eye moves straight across that line, which again is about 15 lines down from the top, you'll see Rabbi Yehuda Omer. And here we're quoting Rabbi Yehuda, who says that one of the members of this panel of three, and that's even in the case of movable objects, one of the appraisers has to be a Kohen. The Chachamim say no, you don't need any representation of Kohuna, not even one single Kohen on the tribunal. You'll only need a Kohen in the panel of 10 for real estate, when we're appraising the value of a piece of property, of what's called karka, then we need at least one Kohen. Now keep in mind that the word Kohen in the Torah appears 10 times, 3 times in Pidyon Erechim, 3 times in Pidyon Behema, and then 4 times at the end of the parasha in Pidyon Karkos. So for those who've been with me, again, there's some new faces here, but I just want to make a note of this, that we have 3, 3, and 4. In the case of Karka, we're going to see Karka as the completion of all the Kohanim that are mentioned before, and that means 3 plus 3 plus 4, we're going to need 10. In the cases of Erchin and Metaltalin, means Behema, we're going to need 3. But Rabbi Yehuda insists that one of those 3 has to be what?
A Kohen.
So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Papa Abaye. Rav Papa turns to Abaye with the following point. Bishleim, I could understand the Rabbi Yehuda, Hainu Dechsiv Kohen. Now, the Torah went out of its way to mention a Kohen, not just in the case of Karka, where the Chachom agree that you need one Kohen represented on the board, so to speak, but the Torah mentioned Kohen even with regard to Erchin, even with regard to Behema. In all cases, the Torah kept repeating Kohen over and over again. So we must have one representative of Shevet Kohuna, one single Kohen, on the panel in all cases. El Rabbanon, but according to the Chachamim, they say that you only need a Kohen in the case of Karka when you need a panel of 10, 9 of which are Yisraelim, and only one of which is a Kohen. Is Kohen Lamaluhu? Why did the Torah repeat Kohen not only in the parasha of Karkos, of real estate, but the Torah repeats Kohen even in the parasha of Metaltalin, even in the parasha of Erechin? Rabbi Yehuda is very consistent. He always requires at least one Kohen on the board, on the panel. But the Chachamim dropped the requirement of Kohen. They only insist on a Kohen in the one particular case of Karkos, but yet the Torah mentions Kohen in all 3 cases, not just in the case of Kark. And the Gemara ends up with the word Kash. Now, we have to be very sensitive, and I've mentioned this many times in the past, that there are 2 words, a choice of 2, that the Gemara has as alternatives when the Gemara finally ends up with a question that's unanswered. And they are Kasha and, who remembers?
Tiyuvta.
Excellent. The difference is that in a Tiyuvta, the Gemara means to say there's no answer to this question. Rack your brains, it's an absolute contradiction, you'll never figure it out. Kasha, on the other hand, means that it's a difficult question, but theoretically you could find an answer. So naturally, and this is a methodology that appears all over the place in Shas, whenever the Gemara uses the word Kasha, the Rishonim, the Achronim, the Mefarad, all the commentaries are going to try to come to bat and see what answer could we possibly give. Because the word Kasha implies that there is some sort of resolution to this problem, maybe not a simple, comfortable one, but nevertheless one at all. So what I'm going to read to you now is a summary of the literature here, of the Rishonim and the Achronim who try to defend the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda as to why the Torah uses the word Kohen when in fact we don't even need a Kohen. And Ein Zeh Tiyuvta, the Gemara doesn't call it a Tiyuvta, the Gemara implies it's a Kasha, which Efshal Yashev, you know, if you work hard enough, you'll come up with some explanation for the Shitas Chachamim. So the first answer is offered by what's called a Gilyon. The Gilyon means that in the original manuscript form, which was passed down from one generation to the other generation, there were some rabbis who wanted to add their own comments to a manuscript. So what they did was they wrote it on the side. What's that called?
The margin.
The margin. Excellent. On the margin. So on the margin, right, the kuntres is the manuscript itself. The margin, which is called the Gilyon, in this case, is on the Yad Raman. I've mentioned to you dozens of times that the super commentary on Masechta Sanhedrin, every Masechta has its own favorite Rishon. The one Rishon who put all his energy into Masechta Sanhedrin is called the Yad Raman. So on the margins of the Yad Raman, he says the following. Even the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda agree that the mitzvah is to appoint one Kohen to the panel. One of the 3 in this tribunal should be a Kohen. The only difference between the Chachamim And Rabbi Yehuda is whereas Rabbi Yehuda sees the Kohen as indispensable, he's absolutely critical, the Chachamim say it's a mitzvah min ha-mufchar. If we want to do it the best way, we should have one Kohen on the tribunal. But ein zem akiv, it's not critical. So if you had three Yisraelim and no Kohanim, it's okay. We'll let you get away with it. So when the Gemara says Kasha, the Gemara was baffled by the fact that the word Kohen, as it appears throughout this Pasha, for example, when it appears four times over in the case of Karkos, is Likuva, it's absolutely critical. And if the appraising was done without the participation of a Kohen, it's completely invalid. We've got to start from scratch. Here in the case of metaltalin, the Chachamim say that the addition of a Kohen is an embellishment, but when the Torah requires a Kohen, it's not anything more than a lechatchila, a mitzvah min avuchar. This is the best way to do it. That was bothering the Gemara, because you should be consistent. In the case of Karkos, the Chacham agree you must have a Kohen. And without a Kohen, the whole deal is off. In the case of Pidyon Metaltalin, the Chachamim say it's a nice thing to have a Kohen, and that's the way we should do it, but it's not absolutely necessary. It's not indispensable, as we say. So b'dieved, if you didn't have a Kohen, you can do without it. That's called, in the Gemara's language, Kasha. Kasha means it's not the best situation, it's not the way we'd want it to be, but we can live with it. It's not an absolute shlug-up, as we'd say. It's not a tiyuvta. So that's the Gilyon, the comment on the margin to the Yad Ramah. Now, keep in mind that the presence of a Kohen would make sense, because what we're dealing with here is Pinyon Hegdesh. And the Kohanim have a special relationship to the Beis HaMikdash. They are the Ovdim, they are the ones who are in charge of the service in the Beis HaMikdash. So they, in a sense, have a vested interest that the Beis HaMikdash as an enterprise should function and should be financially sound, and they should be getting the monies that are coming to them. So we don't want to let the person do his own appraisal and then come to the Gizbar who's representing the Beis HaMikdash and say, well, here's the money that I give you, now give me back my kli. And we don't know if he's possibly cheating, either deliberately, chas shalom, or inadvertently, he might not be so careful, and Bezdin was underpaid. So, not Bezdin, again, when I say Bezdin, I mean Hegdesh. So in order to guarantee that Hegdesh isn't underpaid, we need this objective panel of people who are in charge of Shuma to appraise the value of the object, so that the Gizbar will receive exactly the value of the object and not a penny less. It makes sense that a Kohen should be represented here on this panel, because, after all, the Kohenim are in charge of what goes on in the Beis HaMikdash. Now he quotes another opinion, and this is the Toras Chaim. The Toras Chaim lived about two centuries ago, and he was a major commentary on the Gemara. And he wants to defend the Chachamim. And he says, why did the Torah say Kohen when really you don't need Kohen unless you get to Karka? And he applies the principle of symmetry. Symmetry meaning that the Torah wants to use a symmetrical language, a similar language. In the case of Karka, the Torah repeats Kohen four times, because in evaluating a karka for the purpose of pidyon, after a person was magdish's karka, we absolutely need the presence of a Kohen. So the Torah wanted to take the entire enterprise of pidyon, of redeeming Hegdesh, and give one spin on it. So it repeats the word Kohen. We need it in the case of Karka, and it's an absolute requirement. We don't need it in the case of Metaltalin, but the Torah uses the word Kohen to maintain, so to speak, the beauty of the parasha. It's more of a literary kind of thing, and that's why the Gemara says Kasha, but it's not a Tiyuvta. But now he has a real problem. He doesn't understand why the Gemara says Bishlema l'Rav Yehuda, implying that according to Rav Yehuda, everything is smooth, and we have no problems. He says, let's ask a Kasha Rabbi Yehuda. Why did the Torah, in the case of Hegdeshos, use the word Kohen when Hegdeshos includes two chapters. It includes Erechin, which we'll explain, and then after the three Kohanim in Erechin, it goes on to three Kohanim in the case of Pidyon Hegdesh, where he dedicated his animal for Hegdesh, and now he wants to be poured to the animal, the Torah says Kohen. Well, Rabbi Yehuda requires a Kohen, one representative Kohen on this panel, in the case of Pidyon Hegdeshos. But in the case of Erechin, we don't require a Kohen. The Toras Chaim assumes, as a Dover Poshet, he never questions this premise, that Rabbi Yehuda himself agrees that you don't require a Kohen in every single case. There's Erechin and there's Hegdeshos. And only one of the two will require the presence or the participation of a Kohen, but not both of them. Now, I told you that in the case of Pidyon Hegdesh, we needed, according to you, the one Kohen. However, there's another opinion in Rabbi Yehuda that in the case of Erechin, you require one Kohen. And Rabbi Yehuda agrees that only in Erechin do you require one Kohen, but in Pidyon Hegdeshos you don't require a Kohen at all. The bottom line is that even Rabbi Yehuda is going to have to agree that in one of these three cases, right, we have Erechin, Hegdeshos, and Karka, in one of the three we don't require a Kohen. So why does the Gemara attack the Chachamim, and the Chachamim only require a Kohen in the case of what? Karkos. When even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that at least in one of the three, let's say in Erechin, maybe you require a Kohen, but not in Pidyon Hegdeshos. So there is one Kohen which is completely superfluous in the parasha. That's the question of the Toras Chaim. Now, one of his contemporaries was called the Tosfos Yontif. Have you ever heard of the Tosfos Yontif? His name was Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R. And he was an Ashkenazic Jew who took it upon himself to write a super commentary on the Mishnayos. Now today, nobody learns the Tosfos Yontif anymore because we have Kahati's Mishnayos. But back in the day, when I was a kid, they didn't have Kahati. So we used to learn the Bar Tanura and the Tosfos Yontif. The Tosfos Yontif writes that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Chachamim even in the case of Hegdeshos, not only in the case of Erechin. Meaning that according to Tosfos Yontif, Rabbi Yehuda requires a Kohen on the tribunal for Shuma, not only in the case of Erechin, but also in the case of Pidyon Hegdeshos, meaning the case of a behemoth, an animal, a metalton that was consecrated for Hegdesh. But according to Toras Chaim, the Torah says that you need three. The Torah repeats the word Kohen three times in Erechin, three times in Pidyon Hegdeshos of Metaltel, and four times in the case of Pidyon Hegdeshos of Karkos. And yet, in one of these three, let's call it Pidyon Hegdeshos, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that we drop the requirement of a Kohen. So why did the Gemara ask that Kasha Rabbi Yehuda? Why does it say Kohen? So the Toras Chaim answers the following. Pam achas, in one context, we need the word Kohen legufa. Now here, Rabbos, I have to take a minute to make sure that you understand this word legufa, because it's going to come up over and over again. Should I write it on the board or should I spell it for you? Lamed gimel vav pei hey, legufa. In Aramaic, it's legufe. You know, you add a yud before the hey. Legufa means for in and of itself. In other words, at least one time the Torah had to write the word Kohen, and that's justified because we need a Kohen. So for example, in the parasha of Erechin, at least once the Torah has to say Kohen according to Rabbi Yehuda, because otherwise I don't know that you need a Kohen for the Shuma, for the evaluation, the appraisal of Erechin. What do we do with the other nine times that the Torah repeats the word Kohen? So now we have to introduce another principle. How many people in the room here are familiar with the following principle? You know, I always have to gauge myself to see what you know, what you don't know. You know, I can't always put my finger on that. Okay, raise your hand if you're familiar with the following principle. Ein miut achar miut el larabos. I don't see too many hands going up. You heard of it? Okay. Ein miut achar miut el larabos means that if the Torah repeats a requirement, which is called a miut. Miut means it only applies in this condition. If the Torah repeats it, it did so for purposes of ribui, for an inclusion. So we have something called a miut, an exclusion. We have something called a ribui, which is an inclusion. And if you have a word which in its context would be an exclusion to tell you it's this and only this, it's got to be X. If the Torah repeats it a second time, it becomes a ribui. It becomes an inclusion. Now, if you have a sampling of all of Klal Yisrael, so that a miut would mean all of Klal Yisrael with the exception of Kohanim, that would be a miut. A ribui would mean that even though you need a Kohen, you don't need a Kohen. Do you follow me? That would be in the case of a second miut. So if the Torah writes a Kohen a second time, the second time it writes a Kohen is to tell you that you can even introduce a Yisrael into the picture. You don't need a Kohen. Do you hear the paradox? But this is one of the rules, I don't know if you want to know the fancy English, they call it hermeneutic principles by which we interpret the Torah. That if the Torah repeats a miut, it knows the condition and the restriction is written in the Torah not once but twice, it's coming for a ribui, it's coming to include something. Now, in all cases of a miut achar miut, we have to make sense out of the first word, which is a miut, the first time the word appears, and that makes sense, and we're going to derive halachas from that, and then we're going to take the second time that that same word appears as a ribui to tell you that that original halacha doesn't apply in all cases. So what we're going to have is the following, according to Rabbi Yehuda. We need one Kohen. The Torah has to tell me at least once that you need a Kohen to appraise the value of the Erchin. He has to be a member of this tribunal. Now the Torah repeats the word Kohen. The second time that the Torah repeats the word Kohen, it's a ribui. And what does that tell you when you have a ribui on top of Kohen? Even in Israel, you don't need a Kohen. So on the one hand, you do need a Kohen. On the other hand, you don't need a Kohen. So how do we reconcile that? The answer is you need one Kohen. So the Torah is now telling you that all the other members of the tribunal are not Kohenim. And the Torah says that by repeating the word Kohen. So on a literary level, in terms of the beautiful poetry of the Torah, which is called a Mikra, the verses in the Torah is going to be symmetrical and use the word Kohen over and over again. But in terms of the halachic analysis of the word, the second time that the Torah says Kohen, and how much more so the third and the fourth and the fifth, that's called a ribui to tell you they don't need a Kohen. So only the first Kohen is legufa. What does legufa mean?
In and of itself,
you need a Kohen. Therefore, says the Torah, Chaim, don't ask me a question as to why the Torah repeats the word Kohen again and again. The Torah is only repeating the Kohen again and again to tell you that you only need one Kohen, the first Kohen that appears in the parasha. And therefore he says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Pam achas legufo, we need a Kohen. And that means we have to have a Kohen as part of the Shuma, the panel of appraisal. But Kol Shar, all the other times that it says Kohen in the Torah, we apply the principle of Ein Miut Achar Miut El Rabos Uleficha Dai B'Kohen Echad. So in Parshas Erchin, which is the first Parsha of the three, remember we said it's Erchin, and then it's Pidyon Ekdeshos in the case of Behema Metaltalin, and then it's Karka. So the word Kohen appears once at the very beginning of this Parsha, and that's Erchin, to tell you that in Erchin you must have a Kohen. And that's what Yehuda's called legufa. And then, in the case of pigeon karka, we need 10 people. Why do we need 10 people? Because the four kohanim that appear in the parasha at the end of this section of Vayikra Chav Zayin, they complete the number 3, 3, and 4 to the number of 10. V'gavi pigeon karka tzorach asorah noshim, we need 10 people. And we derive this from the fact that the word Kohen appears 10 times in the parasha. With regard to the first Kohen in the parasha, that's by Erchin, that's legufa. So Rabbi Yehuda requires a Kohen as part of that panel. But when he gets the pinyon metaltalin, where again it's a repetition of the word Kohen, he's going to use that for a ribui. And that's going to be the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda.
What happens when it's the third time?
Now, the third time is a separate parasha called Pidyon Karkos. And once again, Rabbi Yehuda is going to insist that since we're applying the principle of Hashlama, right, why do we require 10 members of this board, of this panel, for appraisal of real estate? The answer is because it's Hashlama. Hashlama means that Karka is standing on the shoulders of what came before it. It's completing the parasha. So the parasha started with 3, that was Erchin, went on to another 3 in the case of Hekdeshos, that's the case of Metaltolin. And now we sew together all of these into the 4 of Karka, and we end up with the number 10. But the requirement of Kohen now is going to be applicable to the Karka case because of the first Kohen in the parasha, because again, we're reading it as one long parish, as far as Karkos is concerned, that's called Ashlomo. And that first Kohen is Legufe to require a Kohen.
No one considered the idea that you need all Kohenim?
So the Gemara is going to ask that question now.
Okay.
And the Gemara is going to say the reason you don't need all Kohenim is because of this principle called Ein Miut Achar Miut El Larabos. That if the Torah sets up a condition or a requirement, and then it repeats that requirement over and over again. Every time it repeats the requirement, it's to tell you that you don't need that requirement. Again, that's the paradox here. We're going to try to understand how this principle operates. So,
how do you know when to distinguish between the principle you just articulated and the concept of Kefil Lashon?
I would say the following. Kefil Lashon is used in a non-halachic context, meaning when the Torah is telling you something to emphasize it, it might repeat it more than once, but it's not a miut because there's no halachic significance. So the Torah might say, let's say, want to emphasize, you know, that you have to give stock of the Torah, say, Nason Titein, with the Kefil Lashon. You know, there's a famous word from the Chofetz Chaim. He says that the real challenge is the second time you give, and he says that sometimes you should give a gift to an ani, and then stop yourself and say, wait a minute, the pasuk says nasan titein, give another gift, and run after him to give him a second gift. So now we're up to Karkos. Does everybody have the place? Where are we? We're on the 2 dots on Daf Tes Vavav and Aleph. The first word in the line is Lama. It's about, I'd say, 20 lines down from the top. Does that make sense? And it says, HaKarkos Tisha V'Kohen. To appraise Karkos, you need a panel of 10, which is comprised of 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kohen. So the Gemara says, Minani Mili. What's the basis for this halacha? Where do we find a scriptural source for this halacha? And the Gemara answers, in the name of Shmuel, Asara Kohen Ksuvim Beparsha. 10 times in the Parsha Pinyan Ekdeshos, the Torah repeats the word Kohen. Chad Legufe, one to require a Kohen. And again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that Chad Legufe appears in the Parsha of Erchin and is a halachic requirement of a Kohen to be there for the appraisal of Erchin. The Chachamim disagree, and their Chad Legufe means Chad Legufe within the Hashlama, within the broader context of Karkos, because as we said, Karkos plays a major role here. I call it Achron Achron Chavim, it's the last, and therefore it incorporates the entire parasha. And now we come to the conclusion that Hanoch, once we have 1 Legufe, the other 9, have a Miut Achar Miut. That's already one exclusion after the other exclusion. Again, the word Kohen is always called a miut because it excludes a Yisrael. And now the Torah is excluding a Yisrael over and over again. By the way, Rabbi Osai, had the Torah used the word Kohen only once in the parasha, what would be the conclusion?
It's a miut.
You would need 10 Kohenim on the panel. Why? Because the Torah never excluded a Kohen, meaning the Torah never allowed you to introduce a Yisrael. But now that the Torah repeats itself over and over again with the word Kohen, we apply the principle of Ein Miut Achar Miut Ela Lerabos, which means Afilu Tisha Yisrael the Echad Kohen. Now I'd like to give you 2 possible understandings of Ein Miut Achar Miut El Larabos. They are both offered by the super commentary on Sanhedrin. Who remembers what the super commentary on Sanhedrin is?
Yad Rama.
The Yad Rama. Excellent. The Yad Rama says the following. This is his first understanding or explanation. He says that when we have a Miut Achar Miut, Ain't tzorach b'miut hasheni. The Torah didn't have to repeat the second miut. Had the Torah left it as is with one miut, we would have derived the conclusion that in this context we need X, whatever that miut is. And that's the restriction, that's the condition. And yodim zos min ha-miut ha-rishon. So why did the Torah have to repeat the miut again and again and again? He says, Yesh Lomer, the only justification for that is that the miut hasheni, bala galos, the second miut is coming to reveal, sha'af ha-miut ha-rishon, even the first miut, is not a total miut, eno bala mait legamre, it's not a complete miut, but it's only a one-time miut. But hutzrach ha-kosev legalos, she'ein kavonas ha-miut ha-rishon lemait, meaning completely mait, and therefore, yechlumo mikach shakavanahu l'rabos. So again, you have a second mute, and it's not justified. The only way of justifying the second mute is that it's coming as a mute. What does it mean the second mute is coming as a mute? It's being mamayit the first mute, to tell you that the first mute doesn't apply. So the first mute only applies in one particular occasion, one particular case. And now the second mute is coming to say that that mute only applies in that one case, and it doesn't apply elsewhere. Then he gives a second explanation. He says that when we have a miut achar miut, the second miut is not coming as a miut at all. He writes, "Ein miut hasheni bo lemayit min hanemar b'kosuv, ela min miut harishon l'fichoch yesh l'rabos." He says that when you have a second miut, since you already have a miut, the second miut has to take on a whole new personality, a whole new character. It becomes a ribui. But the bottom line is, we have a principle called Ein miut acha miut elo l'rabos. Maskif le Rav Huna b'rei to Rav Nosson. Here's the kasha Rav Huna. How could Shmuel say that there's a miut acha miut, and therefore it's a ribui? And how many times do we have a ribui, Rabosai? 9 times. Do you follow? Because again, when we're applying the principle of miut achar miut, we're saying that every time the Torah repeats the word koin, except for the first occasion, it's coming as a ribui. So we have a ribui times 9 to tell you that 9 out of 10 of the members of the tribunal will be what? Koin. Will be Israelim. They don't have to be koin. No. Are you with me? Mm. I don't know, Don. You get me nervous.
No, I understand what you're saying. Okay.
So the Gemara says the following: Ema, I don't understand your logic. Chamisha Kohenim, Chamisha Yisraelim. Why? The first one, the first Kohen in the parasha tells you that you must have a Kohen. The second one says you don't need a Kohen. Okay, but now why does the Torah repeat itself on the third occasion and say Kohen? That must be again a miut to tell you that you do need a Kohen. So when you take the number 10 and you skip every other one, then what you can end up with is that 5 Kohanim and 5 Yisraelim. Do you follow? So the first Kohen tells you a miut, the second Kohen is a ribui, the third Kohen is a miut, and the fourth Kohen is a ribui, etc., etc. You should end up with 5 Kohanim and 5 Yisraelim. I'll read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, Hare tevas Kohen arishona balamayit. Rakoin v'lo Yisrael. Tevas Kohen Ashnia, the second Kohen, is a miut achar miut, and it comes to be marbe. And now it tells you that even Yisrael could be part of this panel. Amnam tevas Kohen Ashlishis, the third time that it says the word Kohen, that's not a miut achar miut, because the second time it said the Kohen, it was telling you already a ribui. So you can't tell me that the third one is also miut achar miut l'rabos. That doesn't make any sense. Lefichach, therefore, you must come to the conclusion that the third time it says Kohen, it's coming to be Mamayit again. So we go back to the original Kohen and we apply the same principle of a miut to tell you that you need a Kohen and only a Kohen. And the Gemara says Kash. Now again, when it says Kash and it doesn't say Tiyufta, what are we going to anticipate? A whole literature to try to answer this question. Kash. So how do we deal with this question? So he says the following. Rishona vashlishis vachamishis vashvias vachias, right, numbers 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9, bos lamait, rakoin velo Yisrael. Shnia, Revius, Shishis, Shminis, Asiris. Numbers 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. They are even numbers. Bos, Bitoras, Ein, Mir, Achamir, El, Rabos. They're even in Yisrael. So we have 5 Miutim and 5 Mir, Achamir, which means a Ribui. So we have 5 Miutim that require a Kohen and 5 Ribuis that tell you even Yisrael is good. So then at the end of the day, we should require 5 and 5. Now, just 1 second here. I'm looking for a certain note, which I'm not finding right now, but we'll get to it later. First of all, Rabosai, when we talk about getting together all these people on a panel, and they're really representing the best interests of Hegdesh, and they do the appraisal, he quotes a Tosfos. The Tosfos, unfortunately, is not here, so I can't show it to you. It's in Masechta Erechim. And Tosfos says that these 10 people who serve on this panel to appraise the real estate, they are a Beis Din. And he says, Klalu biyodenu she'ein osin Beis Din shakul. What does that mean? We always need an odd number. We can't have an even number. Shema, we're always afraid. Yachleku b'shikul adas. They will have a debate, a division of opinion. And if they're 5 against 5, for example, in an even, is loteach rabin, and we can't come to any conclusion. We always need an odd number to make sure that we'll be able to tip the scale in event of a debate. So Tosis therefore asks, if the 10 people who are praising the karka form a Beis Din, why don't we need an odd number? So Tosis answers that shuma, that appraising something, is tolui in shikul adas, meaning there's no final objective answer to the question. And there could very well be a major difference of opinion. Now, I'm going to give you an example. I don't know that this is a really relevant example. Maybe somebody could help me with this. I don't know too much about real estate. Gersh, maybe you could help me. But I would say the following. If, let's say, you wanted to sell a piece of property on Rehov Emek Rifa'im. So there's so many variables to consider, besides the shiputz and the beautiful building and the porches and all the rest, which you always have to consider. Take a look at the location. Emek Rifa'im is a great location, but they're about to run a train by here. So if you want to make a good sale and find a buyer, you have to lower the price, reflecting the fact that it's going to be an upkumenish. How do you say that in English? It's going to be a horrible living in the thing for 2 years. This is what we're going through in Har Nof.
5 years.
Oh, 5 years. In Har Nof, for example, they're getting to the point where they may have no exit from Har Nof. It's unbelievable what's going on. They're doing work here and there and elsewhere. So I said to my wife, sell the place before it's too late. And there are other variables that come into equation, and it's very difficult to come to a final conclusion and figure out what the market value is for this piece of real estate. And therefore, it's totally b'shikul adas. So Tosfos, based on this problem, since it's so difficult, it slips through the fingers, to come to a decision, he says that in event that there are 5 against 5, we're going to add an 11th person, and he's going to be the final decision. Hopefully, his name is not Lieberman. Anyway, but he's going to make the final decision.
Here in art school, they bring down Tosfos in Megillah that asking the same question. And he writes there.
Does he quote Rabbeinu Yonah?
No.
Because that's going to be my next.
He says that the reason why it's even is it has to be unanimous.
And who's he quoting?
Tosfos Megillah 23b.
What footnote?
Question: why we do not require an 11 judge, so that the court will have an odd number of judges. So, the Tori Evan suggests the following explanation. Generally, a court must consist of an odd number of judges so that any vote will result in a majority decision. In this case, however, the decision of the 10 appraisers must be unanimous. Majority rule does not apply.
I'm not familiar with that. Tosa Megillah.
What footnote?
Number 12.
Footnote number 12. So let me just tell you, you know, everyone has their own Gemara. My Gemara Masifta says the following. Hiksha Rabbeinu Yonah. Maduin Oketes HaGemara Sheesh Miut Achar Miut. And we have one Miut and then nine Ribuyim. That was the Kasha of Rav Huna. Hari B'chol Mokom Omrim Ein Miut Achar Miut El Rabos. As Afilu HaMiut HaRishon Eino Memait El Mar Bevin Keino Yitzorach L'Rabos Asor Yisrael Below Kohen. So Rabbeinu Yonah thinks that if the Gemara's logic is correct, then the Gemara wants to apply the principle of Ein Miut Achar Miut El Rabo straight across the line and come to the conclusion that you should require five and five. He says, why not say that you don't need a Kohen at all? Even the first Kohen should be a Miut. And he answers that the first Kohen is called Legufe. You remember that we spoke about the word Legufe. Then he asks the Ran's kasha. Ketzad yitochin lo mashet teisha pa'omim nichtuva teves kohen b'toras miut achar miut. And therefore, at the end of the day, the Gemara wants to say that if you apply miut achar miut nine times over for each of the nine kohenim, you can set up a panel with nine Yisraelim. Harei kol teves elu tzrichos hein legufan kedei lelamit shetzorach asorah anoshim b'pidjan karkos. Interesting, the Ran says that I need the word Kohen to add to the number of people on the panel. It means that's called Legufe itself. It's telling me how many people have to sit on the panel. That already justifies the word. So the word is not an extra word. When do you apply the principle of Ein Miut Achar Miut El Rabos? That's only when you have an extra word. It's completely superfluous. But here, it's not superfluous. And he comes to the conclusion, the Ran, that there's an extra hey. It doesn't say Kohen, it says Ha Kohen. And if it was only adding another member of the tribunal, of the panel, it wouldn't have had to say Ha Kohen. It could have said Kohen. And the fact that it adds the hey, that's called a mute. Okay. Now the Mishnah says Adam Kayotziben, which means that the din of Shumas Adam has the same din, the same requirements as Shumas Karkos. So just like in the case of real estate, in order to be Poda Hegdesh, if the real estate was consecrated for Hegdesh, you need a panel of 10 people, 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kohen. So too in the case of an Adam. Now, what is that referring to? The Gemara says, Adam Mikadosh. Can you be Magdish? Can you consecrate a person? That the Mishnah has to tell you that in order to evaluate the person for Pidyon, we need 10 people on the tribunal. Om Rabbi Avo, the Mishnah is talking about a case, be Omer Dami Olai. Not that he was Magdish his own body, so to speak, his own soul, but he was Magdish his value on the market. Tisanya, we learned in the Braisa, HaOmer, if a person declares, Dami Olai, Shamino, so we appraise his value, Ki'ilu Eved HaNimkar B'Shuk, what monies would he bring in as a slave in the market? That depends upon his strength, his health, his age, etc., etc. Also his skills, right, if he has skills. The Eved Iskash Likarkos, the key of keys here, to unlock the mystery of why, in the case of a person who says, Dami Olai, we need to get a panel of 10 people to evaluate and appraise how much you'd be worth at an slave market, is because of a Hekesh. And that Hekesh equates Eved to Karka. And Eved, in this context, means a human being. A human being is equated to Karka. Now, where is this Hekesh? So Rashi points out that in Vayikra Chaf Hei, the pasuk says, "Visnachaltem osam livnechem achrechem loreshes achuza." The Torah is talking about achuza. Achuza means a piece of real estate which is now being bequeathed to one's heirs, And the Torah says b'neichem. So the word b'neichem indicates a human being, and the word achuzah indicates a piece of property. And we have now a hekish in the same pasuk, and therefore we equate the dinim of karka to the dinim of a person to the dinim of karka. So let me ask you the following question. Now I'm about to throw out something that requires a great deal of knowledge, so don't get scared. But I'll try to explain. What would be if I claim that you confiscated, you stole two of my avodim, and you confess on one and deny on the other? Does anybody know when you have a claim against someone and he confesses, he admits on one and denies the other, what that's called?
Vigo?
Migo.
No, that's, well, it is in a very sophisticated sense. The Gemara is going to raise the question. But that, no, you're also very close. That's called moda b'miktsas. Now, there are three cases in which the Torah requires a shvuah, an oath. One of them is moda b'miktsas. So, for example, if I claim you owe me 100 and you admit on 50 and deny the other 50, you have to take a shvuah d'oraisa on the other 50. A shvuah d'oraisa is not, it's not an exciting proposition. You don't want to take a shvuah d'oraisa. It's really scary. Now I'm asking to return to me the two avodim that you stole, and you say I only stole one of it. I'll give you back Shmelki, but I'm not going to give you back Beryl, because I didn't steal Beryl. Go find the thief. So you don't take a shvuah in that case. Why? So the Gemara says that the principle of modim b'miktsas does not apply to karkos, meaning if I demand from you two pieces of real estate, let's say I say you stole them, I bought them from you, etc., etc. You admit that one piece of real estate on the corner of 9th Avenue is yours, but the other people of real estate on the 10th Avenue, that's mine. So in such a case, there's no shvua. Why? Because we have a principle called Ein Nishbon Ala Karkos. We don't take a shvua on karka. We only take a shvua on currency or on movables. Now what happens if a person claims that you stole two avodim and you admit on one and deny on the other? Should you take a shvua or not? Well, is an eved movable? Yes, he has feet. He moves from place to place. Karka is always in the same place. But you don't take a shvua. Why not? Because eved hukash lekarka. We have a hekesh between eved and karka. Now I'm going to ask you another question. Does anybody here know what the word shibud means? And you can spell it in English for me.
It's like doing a mortgage.
Okay, a mortgage. Another word is a lien. How do you spell the word lien?
L-I-E-N.
Excellent, L-I-E-N. See, if I was teaching younger boys, they wouldn't know how to spell lien. But you gentlemen are very sophisticated, so you know it's an L-I-E-N. So that's called in Hebrew a shibud, which means the following. If you borrow money from me, your karka, your real estate, is liened, that in case you default on the loan, I have recourse to collect your karka in lieu of the money you owe me. So again, you have the right to pay me off in cash, and that's what you should do. But if you don't have cash, I will confiscate your karka. However, I cannot take your mule or your diamond ring, because that's called metaltalin. There's no shibud on metaltalin. Now, if there's shibud on karka and not on metaltalin, what would you say about an eved? If, let's say, you own an eved and you default on a loan, can I confiscate your eved in lieu of the debt, the outstanding debt that you haven't paid me? What would you say?
Yes. Usually you would say no, because an eved...
I get a yes and a no. Right. If you apply the principle of hekesh, which means that the Torah equates an eved with karka, so we just said that the shibud on karka. So an eved would have the status of karka. Yet, and here's a surprise for you, the Gemara says there's no collection from an eved. There's collection from a lien on karka, on real estate, but not from an eved. What happened to the hekesh between an eved and a karka? So we asked this question to Rav Soloveitchik, and he said the following. I don't know if you know the Brisker style, but he said the following. He says, the Eved has a shame karka, but he's a cheft of metaltalin. Again, you got to be a salvation to say such a thing. What did he mean? I'm going to try to break it down into more commonplace understanding. Yeah, what did he say?
Yeah, your slave, you can hide him away someplace, but the karka, you can't move it.
Correct. Right. So that's called a cheft of metaltalin. Why is an evid a chefetz metaltel? Because it's not reliable. The whole concept of a shivud means betichus. Betichus means that the malveh, the one who extended the loan, right, the lender, he has betichus, he has security, because he knows that even if your karka is in China or in Japan, he can always collect it. It's there and it's always going to be there. But in a case of a taltal, in something that's movable, where the owner could hide it, right? Let's call him the lova, the borrower. He can hide it away. The malva doesn't have das. He doesn't have betichus. He doesn't rely on it. And as you say very well, the evid moves around and jumps from place to place, and he could hide away the evid somewhere, you know, and there's no betichus on an evid. That, in Rav Soloveitchik's language, is evid is a chefza of metaltalin. Chefza meaning in the physical material reality of the universe, he is metaltalin, and therefore there's no shibud on an evid. So when we talk about shem karka, in other words, we're talking about the abstract definition of karka, the evid, like the karka, by virtue of this hekesh, has a shem karka, and there's no shvu on an evid. And Ali Gemara is assuming that in the case of an evid, you need a panel of 10 people in order to appraise the value of an evid, because the evid is hukash lekarka, he has a shame karka. But if you're talking about the mitzias, the physical reality of an evid, the cheft of the evid, he is metaltu. Boy, Rabbi Ovin raised the following question. Seir ha'omeid ligzos bekama. Okay, this reminds me, I have to take a haircut. My wife is hounding me. I just don't find the time to take a haircut. When you go for a haircut in this country, sometimes you have to wait like an hour or so. I don't know.
I make an appointment.
You make an appointment. Okay. I'll tell you the truth. My Bob, I love him to pieces, but even when you make an appointment, you never know what's going to happen, because he always fits in someone else, you know, or he's behind his schedule. I don't know. Anyway, so the Gemara wants to know the following. What happens if a person takes this pledge of dummy or lie? Correct? Dummy or lie. So we said that in dummy or lie, we have to take this panel of 10 people and evaluate, appraise how much he would be sold as an evid. What happens if, instead of saying dummy or lie, referring to his whole body, you know, the value of my body on the slave market, he says, I want to be magdish to Hegdesh, my hair. Now, hair is not really it doesn't have a great value, but if you're making sheitloch, you know, you may be able to make a wig out of it. But this seir is omeid ligzos. In other words, it's getting already wild and he needs a haircut. So now, what he wants to do is, he wants to be podeh seir. Now, on the one hand, the seir now, at this particular moment in time, is connected to his body. Now, we said that anything that's in the body of a person has the status of karka, and we require 10 people. On the other hand, this seir, although it's part of the body, it's omeid ligzos. We're about to cut it off. And this introduces a universal issue in all of Shas. If we have any Dafyomi people, you'll always remember this concept of omeid kid, etc. When something is omeid, like for example, the Gemara has a question about peros, about fruits or grains that are about to be cut down, they're about to be harvested, they're fully ripened in the field. Do we consider it as part of the karka? And then we apply the principle of Einish Bar Nala Karko, so I have a claim on these fruits. Or do we say, no, ha-omeid li-kotzer or li-batzer ki-batzer dummy. It's already as if it's cut off, because it no longer is attached to the karka. The seyar, although it's still attached to the head, but it's going to be cut off. And therefore, ki-gozu's dummy. It's as if it's already cut off. Ubishlosha. Therefore, we view it as metaltalin, and we said a panel for metaltalin is made up of three members. Or do we say no? Kimachuba dami, it's still connected. Now you haven't yet cut it off. Ubasarid has the din of mechubar lebguf, and the guf of the adam is hukash lekarka. Therefore, we need 10 people. That's the suffix of Rabbi Ovin. Now I just want you to realize, Rabbosai, that this principle of Kigazu's Domi does not apply on Shabbos. What do I mean? One of the 39 categories of labor is the removal of hair, or for that matter, anything that's growing that's attached to the place from which it's growing. That's called Meleches Ktsira. Ktsira is Oker Dover Migidula. When you take something out of the place where it's growing, you detach it. In Shabbos, we're not going to say, well, he is intending, you know, tomorrow, on Sunday, he's going for a haircut, therefore he cuts his hair one day prematurely on Shabbos. He's not in violation because it's already Kegazu's Domi. Because once again, here in Shabbos, everything depends upon the Cheftza, to use that Brisket terminology, meaning the reality of it. In the reality of it, this hair is still growing, even though it's going to be cut, and it's ready to be cut, and you intend to cut it. But in the case of Hekdeshos and Pidyon Hekdeshos, here it depends on the Shem Adam, or the Shem Gufo Shel Adam. And therefore the Gemara thinks that it's still Mechubar, or do we say no, since his intention is to cut it off, it's already considered Kegazu's Domi. It's like the fruit that's growing in the field, the grains, and he intends, because it's fully ripened, to cut it off. Toshma. The Gemara says, let's quote a braisa. So whenever you see Toshma, you have to learn two things. Number one, we're bringing a proof text, and number two, it's from a braisa. There's almost no exception to those rules. Hamagdish es avdo, ein moalim bo. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer moalim bisa'aro. The kaimel unto sa'aro, ha'omed li gozos pligi. The problem is the following. There's something called me'ila. And Me'ila applies to Metaltalin. What do I mean? If let's say I consecrate an animal or a table that's Metaltalin, it's movable, then it belongs to Hegdesh. Hegdesh has ownership over it. If I misappropriate and use it for my own purposes, I eat off this table or I ride this horse, then I violate the Isur Me'ila. And I'm chayev to pay Dmei Me'ila, and I have to pay more than it's worth, and I have to bring a carbon, and so forth and so on. So there's a whole parasha of Me'ila. That only applies to what?
Metaltalin.
To Metaltalin. What about an Eved? An Eved is Karka. Why is an Eved called Karka? Everyone, why is an Eved called Karka? Hekesh. Of course, we have a Hekesh. The Hekesh generates a Shem Karka on an Eved. And if there's a Shem Karka on the Eved, there's no Me'ila. But what happens if he enjoys the benefit of the Seyar? That depends upon whether Seyar is considered Karka or Metaltalin. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says that Molim B'Seyar, that despite the fact that a person, an Eved, and Gufo Shel Eved is called Karka, he has the shape of Karka and there's no Me'ila, but of the Seyar, the hair of the Eved is called Metaltalin, and therefore lends itself to the Chiyuv Me'ila. The Kaimalon, and the Gemara says that there is actually a Machlokis Tanoim about the case of Seyar Ha'omed Ligzos. Pligi means that's the subject of the debate here between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chacham. The Chacham Mishita is that Hamagdish is a Eved Ein Molim Bo, there's no Me'ila, even on the Seyar. They don't have any qualification, any exclusion. Rav Shimon Gamliel introduces the exclusion of Seyar, and he says the Seyar is subject to Me'ila. The Chacham reject that. So the Gemara interprets that this Machlokas is about the specific case of Seyar HaOmed Ligzos. You know, he's about to cut off the hair. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that since he's about to cut off the hair, it's Kegazu's Domi. And therefore it has the status of Metaltalin, and it's not considered Mechubar L'Gufo Shel Adam. And therefore there is Me'ila. The Chacham, on the other hand, say that even though it's Omed Ligazos, it's not considered Kigazus, and therefore it's considered Mechubar L'Gufo Shel Adam, which has the din of Eved Hukash L'Karka, and therefore there's no Me'ila. So the answer of the Gemara to the boy Rav Yovan vacillated back and forth about the status of Seyar Omed Ligzos, is that at the end of the day, it's a Machlokas Tanoim. According to Chachamim, we don't consider it as Gozus, and therefore you'll need a panel of 10. According to Just one second. According to the Chachamim, it's not considered gazuz. It's considered... Oh, yeah. According to Chachamim, you'll need a panel of 10 people because of the special halach that pigeon ekdeshos needs shuma of 10 people. And the seyar is still mechubar and has the din of eved hukash lekark. So you need 10. According to Rav Shimon Galil, he holds that kigazuz dummy. It's considered already as if it's cut off. And therefore it's metaltalin. And metaltalin only requires a panel of 3 appraisers. Shmamina. And the Gemara is willing to accept that as the final conclusion. Okay there, Rabosai? So at this point, I'm going to ask you to make a note of where we got up to. That's called Neima Hani Tanoi Kahani Tanoi. I'm going to wish everyone a great Shabbos, Parshas Ki Teitze, and the Birtz Hashem, we should win all our battles. Sure. Okay then? All right, very good.
Is
there a
Shiur on Tuesday? Or where?
Yeah, and Birtz Hashem, there'll be a Shiur on Tuesday. I hope that we can vote very early on Tuesday or very late.
And often.
Yeah. No, yeah.